The choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello! My name is Stephen Briggs. I am Chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 136. Home Buying Playbook in 2023. So with the Super Bowl having recently concluded here, what happens is typically the day after the Super Bowl is one of the busiest days of the year for realtors, because this is when people really start kind of feeling, all right, we're midway through winter, spring is starting to feel like it could be out there somewhere. And with springtime, people think about at this point either buying a home if they've been waiting to buy a home, or if they've been, you know, maybe they meant to sell their home last year but didn't quite get on it. Maybe you've been working through household projects, prepping a home. This is the time of year where you start making sure your realtor's in order and you're getting things kind of situated. Although I've talked to some realtors who have said that process has already begun. Even in January, people have been listing at a higher rate than in years past. So maybe some people have been sitting on the sidelines for a bit. But the bottom line is, if you're looking to buy a home in 2023, this is a very interesting, I think it is a challenging market. But the thing about interesting and challenging markets is that there are opportunities. There are inefficiencies when a market has a number of stresses and pressures on it, which means that if you're searching and you have a bit of a, if you're in a position to be flexible and perhaps a bit open-minded, you may be able to find something that is really special for, you know, not just in terms of your ability to live in it, but to potentially build equity and build wealth from your home. So what I want to do is talk about some key topics regarding kind of where the real estate market it is from a data perspective and a little bit of context regarding that. What factors are kind of going into where things are headed with respect to real estate pricing, what we might be able to expect in the upcoming season. Keeping in mind that we're using logic here more so than a crystal ball, because obviously I can't see the future, but we can at least think through some likely scenarios and go, okay, this is where we're going to, try to position ourselves, and then give you some ideas on things to look for in terms of where you may find actual deals or softness in the market. And then finally, we're going to conclude with the basics, getting back to basics on what you need to have financially going on, and some of the questions you need to have answered before you go into the home buying market. So you have the best chance not only to find what you're looking for, but you even just to know what you're looking for is really quite important. So you end up with the home that you actually want. So with that, I want to first talk about, like I said, what's going on around the country with respect to real estate. And the answer is this market is heavily, heavily driven right now by interest rates. And the bottom, to begin the year this year, we saw a pretty strong decline in mortgage interest rates, as much as 100 basis points, or 1%, essentially. Every basis point is a hundredth of a percent. So if someone says 100 basis points, they mean one full percentage point. This is also talked about as BIPs. 100 BIPs means 100 basis points and 1%. They all mean the same thing. So don't let that throw you. But the thing is, what's happened is when that happened, there was definitely more optimism with respect to where pricing would likely be heading and rolling averages were, had been elevated and things were looking pretty good. I've pulled data from a company called CoreLogic, which had home price insights in January. And across the board, Miami up 21%, which is just huge. Highest among the metros in the country. Houston up 10.6%. San Diego 6.8%. Chicago 6.7%. Denver 6.3%. And so on. Fast forward, and of that, basically, the other thing they provided was kind of a heat map of what you would, what we could expect in terms of changes year on year. And so at that time in January, beginning of January, they had a total of 6 states out of the entire country that were expecting to have less than a 5% change. And most of them are in the Pacific, or on the West Coast. I mean, just straight up the West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, New York State, and Jersey. Fast forward a month, just a month, that number of states expecting less than 5% growth has about doubled. More of the country is looking for more moderate growth. The high-end growth is starting to dissipate rapidly. Remember, Miami was at 21, drops to 19 over the course of a month. Chicago was expected to be at 6.7%, 5.8% growth. Phoenix was predicted at 8.1. Now it's down, it almost got sliced in half down to 5. I will tell you, we had a client recently buy in and around that Phoenix area in one of the burbs, and they saw over a 20% reduction in the price of the home when they went and bid on their property, and that was a new construction, brand new build. San Diego in January 6.8, February 4.5%. So, what happened? Why such softness in February when January was so good? The answer is interest rates have started to move back up. They've given back up, 50% or more of that drop down in January. So what that tells me then is that very much where the market is going to be heading is going to be what the tail that wags the dog here is going to be interest rates, big time. And so to that end, okay, if that's the case. Where is there the greatest likelihood for pricing softness where we're going to see potential declines in housing prices? And the answer is you have to look at the markets over the last couple of years that have been really heated up. Those markets have been LA, San Francisco, and the Bay Area, go up to Portland, go into Seattle, but also the Southwest, looking at Phoenix and the surrounding areas around there, Arizona in general, frankly. Have really seen a sharp pullback in demand. And so what that has caused then essentially is, we're seeing a combination of real estate agents giving a little bit of their commission back in to help sales. We are seeing substantial price reductions on the properties themselves. We have a lot of developers who built or bought as an investment property that are now facing their tax bills. They're seeing a heightened rate environment, and they just want to get out of the home. Maybe take a small loss as opposed to a bigger loss if interest rates continue to persist, which I believe they will. And with that, there's some opportunities there if you're looking to get into those markets. Now, what's interesting. Another way to kind of think about it is where we haven't seen as sharp a decline, like Chicago, for example, is expected to grow at 6.7. Now it's expected to grow at 5.8. But that's not a chop of 50%. The Chicago market has not grown to the same degree or at the same rate as some of these hotter real estate markets. So as a result, what we're also seeing is a durability in pricing in really the Midwest, where there wasn't the heat up like there was in those sexier markets where the Midwest maybe doesn't have it's not on the West Coast, it doesn't have a fancy wonderful beach, but it does have several million people and a lot of entertainment and awesome things happening here. And now people are looking at that going, hey, there's some value there, but there's also a defensiveness to it, that the demand here has been steady and not cooled off, but the prices didn't you know, rocket up either. So there's a lot more durability in that pricing. And so the couple ways you can think of it are, you know, buying into a more durable market can, you know, may give you a feeling that there's some downside protection there, which I think is interesting. I think the thing to think about, too, is that there may be opportunity if you have a flexible mindset that open, you know, in terms of maybe you work from home, maybe you don't care about what part of the country you're in. That may pull some real opportunities for you to find some deals out there where there are declines in prices, and maybe you wanted to live out there, but, you know, thought it was too expensive. Now there are, you know, potentially, and not necessarily in, you know, whether it's in the cities themselves or looking out into the burbs a bit in order to find real value. And I think that's one of the things that people who do want to gravitate toward a metro, there is a reticence almost to consider a community that's 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour away from that metro. But what's happening, though, is a couple of trends. Number one, that's where, you know, typically speaking, again, more stability with the underlying price, because you don't see as high valuations and fluctuations. But we're also seeing urban sprawl again, where people that have been in these cities are selling and moving outward. And so that, you know, in a number of cases where, you know, where clients have been able to, you know, either, you know, who have made that move have found pricing more sticky and expensive when they've tried to move into the burbs. But people who are selling in the burbs are also having multiple, you know, seeing many more multiple offer, higher than list scenarios as a result. So having some flexibility in location may open up some opportunities where someone is having to sell something at a discount. You may have something to go there. The other thing to think about is, in the interest rate environment, one of the things in this interest rate environment, the concern is, I'm buying at 6%, I'm buying at 6.5%. Is this an okay time to buy, given that interest rates are pretty high relative to the last several years? And what I would say to that are a couple things. One, relative to long-term averages, 6% is still pretty inexpensive for a home. Where if you go back 20 years or so, mortgages were well into the 9, 10, 11, 12% range for homes. So that's one. Two, the other thing about the interest rate now is that it may not be the interest rate forever. So if the fear is, well, what if interest rates drop? If interest rates drop, and particularly if they drop more than, you know, a percentage point or more, you likely have the option at that point to refinance and potentially lock in that better rate. And will it cost a little bit to do that? Yes, although you can roll that typically into the mortgage itself. But you don't have to try to play this crystal ball game of guessing on rate. I think this year is very much your buying for price. I think if you find a good home at a great price, you're doing really well. Because one of two things will be true about the financing. Either rates will go down, at which point you refi, or rates will not go down. And if rates don't go down, then you couldn't have made a better decision. And if you couldn't have made a better decision, then why are we holding off from pulling the trigger? So I would not be scared of interest rates that just by itself. Now, we'll get into budget, and that's where interest rates can play into this, I think, more legitimately. But just saying, I don't know, that rate seems high by itself, I don't think that's the correct, a complete way. I don't think it's correct. I don't think it's complete in your thinking there. I don't think you have to fear the rate itself. I do think you have to respect what it means when it comes to your cash flow and what you're going to be expected to have in terms of a mortgage payment. So one thing I will say too, given the softness of certain areas, certain communities and markets and so on, I'll say this, if you have the cash, if you have liquidity and or the skills to take on a home that's not move-in ready, there are a number of fix-up opportunities in higher-end neighborhoods where if you can put some time in, if you're willing to live in construction for a bit, and put, whether it's you putting that sweat equity or hiring that to come in, and redo finishes, redo this and that and other thing. I think there's a lot of potential value that you can build, literally build into a home. And that's, you know, there's an old adage that says don't buy the best house on the block type of thing. But there are opportunities there where people just, you know, whether it's life stresses or, you know, family stresses or whatever, they don't want to put in that type of time. They may not have the bandwidth to do it. And so, you know, being fixed up, move-in ready is where, or not, and it is where a lot of potential value is added when someone is looking to buy in a home. It's certainly more attractive. It attracts a wider buyer pool when it's move-in ready. So if you can find a spot that, hey, there may be issues with the roof. Hey, there may be issues with, flooring, or maybe the whole house needs to be updated and you know it's going to cost money. But you're seeing that's also reflected in the price or the lack of action. You may be able to put in a bid that's well below ask, negotiate through, and then fix it up. And that difference is much better than having bought the home move-in ready. Here's the problem. In order to do that, what we call a deal for a dump, you've got to have liquidity and you've got to have time. So if you're going to go and do that, you've got to be real honest with yourself to say, yes, we have the cash, because trying to get a loan for that type of thing is not easy. And even if you can get that loan, it will be typically higher than your mortgage by an amount to get a renovation loan or that type of thing right off the bat. The other I much prefer if you have cash to be able to make that happen. But then you also have to have the time and you have to actually get those updates done. Get those repairs made. And so with clients that are looking at ones that have that type of opportunity in them, we recommend right off the bat, like even before you move in, you stay renting your apartment an extra month or two, you stay renting or, you know, whatever you got to do to basically make, before you move in all your stuff, which makes it very difficult to do that type of work, rip the Band-Aid off, get that work done, get it scheduled, get it done. You know, all of it, have a good plan for that, then move into that home. Because what that does then is once you fix that up and that you finish it up, you straight up have put in, you know, gain tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of value that will carry through that life of the home. And thinking about that, not just as this is a place where we live, but this is an asset, just like a stock is an investment, an asset, just like, you know, holding a bond is an asset. Your home is an asset. And for many people, it is the largest concentrated asset they will ever have. And if you're thinking that that's you too, yeah, well, let's make sure we really take care of that thing and protect that and store that value for later on. So with all that said, I do want to finish with going back to some basics and talking through just the fundamentals of what will help you win come, you know, the time where you want to buy. And so there are some things to think about in advance and make sure to have prepared so that when you go into the market, you're completely ready. First thing I'm going to say is sitting down and really taking a look at pulling your own credit and making sure your credit score is clean. And what I'm talking about here is, if there are any issues, making sure you've already disputed, resolved, whatever those things. But hopefully you've got a good, clean credit score, because a lack of a clean credit score makes everything here more expensive, which in turn makes it harder to buy the thing you really want. I'm also a huge fan in general, lack of debt, killing any debt that's out there. Even if you've got a high credit score, debt is just straight up working against you. It's a risk factor. Get rid of it. And taking some time to get this part right is so worth it. Because again, it's not that you won't necessarily be able to not buy a home, but you're adding a ton of eroding costs to it that you just don't have to. And that can add risk if something goes bad and you already have, you know, some amount of debt already in play. So and I'll also say this, if you're looking at private mortgage insurance, meaning you're putting less than 20% down on the home, which is a number of people, you want that credit score at least 760 and preferably, frankly, 780 to make sure, even if there's some variance in the score, you're getting top tier rates when it comes to paying as little as possible to insure the loan if you have to go that route. Huge fan of liquidity. having cash on hand, building cash reserves. Because what that does is it provides options for what you end up ultimately putting for a down payment. It also gives you the ammunition you need if you are looking at that fix-up situation to actually be able to fix it up and do the things that need to be done to build that value in your home. But that's only going to happen if you've got cash on hand. Taking up more debt adds more risk. And again, lack of liquidity, lack of options, down payment and everything else. So again, if you're looking at going, the cash should be tight to buy a home right now, then don't buy a home right now. There is nothing that says you have to. But the moment you do, you're at risk at that point. It is a liability and an asset to have a home. And if a number of bad things happen, that can make things very tough. And I've had homeowners go through, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in a year worth of repairs and expenses on pretty moderately priced homes, where it's just a matter of some really bad luck, and but having that liquidity on hand really saved them, and so they're not having to sell out assets out of a 401k or an IRA and taking penalties and having to pay taxes on that money and all of those, you know, nasty things, just not having to basically throw away their future selves to take care of a current problem because they had plenty of cash on hand. So I can't stress enough, have liquidity on hand. And if you're looking at going not quite enough, then it's a matter of take steps. Then what's the plan to build more and do that as soon as possible for yourself? Because the goal here is not to say don't ever buy a home, but it is to say make sure when you're buying a home, you get to stay in it as long as you want to, even if Murphy rears its ugly head in once, twice, three times, four times, doesn't matter. I want you to be prepared. In advance of looking at, you know, going and actually visiting homes, decide on some and on your needs, your wants, and your nice to haves. And I'll actually hand write these down in three separate columns: a column for needs, a column for wants, a column for nice to haves. And make sure that let's say it's you and your partner, then you each do this separately so as not to influence the other. And then you both each present your needs, wants, and nice-to-haves to one another. And when one person's talking, the other person is listening and no one interrupts. And you absorb all that in. And then you discuss respectfully what is in your combined needs, wants, and nice-to-haves. So that when you're making a purchasing decision, if you are a couple, if you're single, well, you can create an angel and a devil and do this, or you can just say one list. But if you're a couple that's looking at purchasing a home, then you have a coalesced, you know, this best of both worlds idea on what are the priorities that will make a home a hit, a miss, or a we're going to think about it. But if you don't know what you are looking for, then it's very easy to become enamored with something you thought was going to fit you that doesn't in fact fit you had you really thought about, you know, before being in the moment of potentially buying a home, what it is you're looking for, and frankly, what it is you are not looking for, or what would automatically disqualify it for you. So, apart from needs, wants, nights to have, we talked about liquidity, so let's talk about budget. I get asked periodically, well, how much of my income should I, you know, what percentage should I, you know, be putting into the house? I think that's a great banker question. That is a I am trying to sell you a loan question. I don't think it is a good way of thinking about how the house fits into your budget. I do think some questions that can help clean that one up are, one, how much do you want your mortgage to be? Like, you may already have in mind, I want my mortgage to be X hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, or I want it to be no more than X percentage of my take home. Maybe I'm wanting that to be 20% or 25% of my take home or whatever it is. And I have some clients where the house is more than that. But the house for them in their lifestyle might be the central place for work, for entertainment. They have their friends over. They don't go out very much. Well, then some of the budgets that might have gone to the movies or gone out to eat or whatever, end up going into the entertaining budget in terms of just having a nicer home for people to enjoy with them. By the same token, if you like doing those other things, then you may pick something that home is not nearly as high a percentage of income. It, you know, maybe it is only 15 or 20% of your total income, but then you have more space to do other things and live life and so on. So you've got, but that budget thing is, it's important to really make sure that whatever that is, yes, it fits your lifestyle. But the other question I'm going to have for you is it sustainable even if one or both of you were to lose your job? Even if you or if you have a partner, you and your partner were to lose their job, how would we feel about that mortgage? Because many times when people look at this, they're looking at it from a best case scenario perspective. So then my job as a financial planner is to say, well, let's look at the worst case scenario. Let's look at my job is to make you see the thing that you don't want to see. Because there's truth in that. And things happen to people. Things happen to our clients. Having a financial planner does not give you any bubble from negative life events to occur. But what it hopefully does do is help you be prepared for them. That is something we do. That is something we work constantly with our clients on. It is a never-ending process of looking at everything that's going on and making sure that come hell or high water, they're doing, that they're going to be not just okay, but thriving. That's our goal. Setting a budget that's sustainable, a sustainable lifestyle, and sustainable from a numeric point of view, very important. After you've done all this, clean credit score, lack of debt, great liquidity, got lots of cash ready to go, you have your needs, wants, nice to haves, probably already have your eye on a couple of homes that are sitting on the market, you've set a budget that's sustainable, now let's talk to that mortgage, and you're almost ready to buy. You have to be almost ready to buy for this next step. So if you're going, yeah, it's 6 months away, don't move beyond this point. Maybe you look at the real estate agent, but you definitely don't talk to the mortgage lender until you get pretty close to the point where you're ready to get started in buying. I think it's okay to have like a pre-meeting, but don't waste their time getting pre-approval letters and having them pull your credit, which by the way, will hurt your credit score in the short term. Constantly having your credit pulled because, I just wanted to see how much I could get. It you're lowering your own credit score and the information isn't valuable because you're not buying a home. So going to that lender and going, okay, I'm ready to buy a home. I'd love to, you know, let's go ahead and get a pre-approval letter. Get that going. That pre-approval letter is typically, you know, is going to be, you know, good while you're shopping. You'll still be able, by the way, if you want to shop mortgages, you find the home, you bid on it, your bid is accepted, you go under contract. You can still, if you haven't agreed on who the lender is going to be, still get that situated and have those credit pulls take place without hurting your credit further. Typically, the credit bureaus will give a 30-day window for if there are multiple credit pulls, if they see they're all from mortgage lenders, to kind of treat that as one event, essentially. But basically, before you go out there and get in the market, make sure you have that pre-approval letter ready to go so that if you find a home that you want, that you're able to place a bid with confidence and you know that barring anything major occurring, you know, or otherwise, that you have an institution that says, yeah, we're prepared to offer that money up. And that's a good thing. That's a good and frankly, in this market, incredibly necessary thing with respect to getting a deal done. The last thing I want to hit with here is making sure that you choose an agent that's good. And that's easier said than done. So things I tend to value in real estate agents, people with experience. I think having years in the industry is important, but also someone that actually does volume. It is amazing to me how many people are realtors and they do one transaction, two transactions, three transactions a year. This is not a person who makes this their career. And the problem with working with someone who does not make this their career is that are they going to be prepared to go against someone who does make this their career when it comes to negotiating for you? And the answer is probably not. And I have seen some gnarly buying agents and selling agents just blunder horrendously on their side to the benefit of our clients because we're much more prepared than they are. But it's amusing to me to see those blunders and my clients go, so what am I supposed to do here? And I'm like, you're supposed to take advantage of the situation because they hired bad people. that's what you're supposed to do. It's not your job to fix their problems. And so to that end, make sure you don't have problems of your own. Having someone, you know, if you're looking to buy in a particular area, having someone that knows that area, but is also going to do the hard work of studying and, you know, being able to really provide strong perspective on what you're buying and what makes sense financially and what does not make sense financially. Because ultimately, they're there to represent you as you're trying to buy that home. And you need to trust that they're meeting their fiduciary obligation to serve your best interests and help you be in the, you know, that this home is not only a great fit for you, but you're getting as much value out of the transaction as possible. So I'm looking for someone with some years of experience, but I want, or on a team with years of experience. If it's someone that's newer, but they're on a team with people with 25 years experience, that may do it, as long as there's that mentoring and that influence. But I'll tell you, by and large, I want to work with someone that's got that background and pedigree and does volume, does transactions, gets things done. And frankly, if an agent you're working with is unable or unwilling to provide you their history over the last year in terms of number of deals done and so forth, run away. Because that's easily able to be pulled up on the MLS. And they either can produce that history for you or they can't. And if they can't, it doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, you don't want to work with them. Work with someone that knows the market. Work with someone that knows what they're doing. Because this is going to be one of the biggest financial transactions in your entire life. Best to have the best people on it if you can. And it's worth being a little bit picky about it. I know everyone wants to help their family, friend, or neighbor, or whoever, but at the end of the day, whatever you end up buying is the home you're buying. You're buying that home. You're buying that mortgage. You're buying all the lows, but also all the problems that home has. So have the team around you and have a process around you that'll help you get this thing as right as humanly possible. And so I think if you focus on having strong, fundamental financials, great liquidity, you've already got your housing priorities and a budget that's sustainable, you got that pre-approval letter, you got a great agent, you can be really confident that you're actually going to have, you're going to be able to attack the market with confidence and find that thing that's going to best fit you, your lifestyle, and hopefully you're going to get a really good deal this year. I do think, again, with interest rates, until interest rates settle, mortgage rates are probably going to be elevated. When the Federal Reserve stops raising interest rates, I think that'll help mortgage rates settle some. Wouldn't surprise me if later this year we see 5.5% to 6% be kind of the general range bound for interest rates, which would be down about 100 basis points from where we're at now. I do think we're going to see a cooling off primarily in markets that have been much hotter historically. Whereas I think more durable markets, like a Midwestern-based market, for example, or even some of the Midwestern steel belt up into the Northeast even a bit, didn't see nearly as high of highs. So I don't think you'll see those markets drop precipitously. And you'll just have to decide whether, you know, where you want to go hunting and so forth. And keeping in mind that the more flexible you can be either with location or flexibility with respect to the condition of the home, you may be able to find some real bargains as you're going out there this year, because interest rates are going to spook people. Anyone that has to sell has to respect from a price standpoint that you have a market, a buyer pool that's just much smaller than a couple of years ago. And with that, you may be able to take advantage of that and find something that's going to be a great fit for you for the long run. With that, I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Money is Personal. Make sure to follow, subscribe, whatever you got to do. Find us on your favorite podcast platform. You can also catch episodes at all of our episodes on BriggsWealth.com. And then on top of it, make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We'll post our episodes. Make sure to be in the know on what's happening around here. And if you have any questions or want to have a consultation, just email me, Steven, Steven, at BriggsWealth.com, or go to our website, BriggsWealth.com. Go to schedule a free consultation on the left-hand side and schedule that thing, and we'll be happy to meet with you. So thank you so much. Have a great week. Be safe, be well, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.